The administrator made a luminous signal in the shape of a triangle, and I noticed that all the co-workers stood up in a posture of respect. "It's prayer time at the aid station," said Alfredo to let us know exactly what was occurring. The sun had disappeared from the sky, but the entire celestial canopy still reflected the golden disk. Twilight tones filled the surroundings with marvelous light effects that were highly visible to us now because Alfredo, although I didn't understand why, had ordered all the artificial lights to be turned off before the prayers. As a result, the darkness became very intense amidst the pavilions, but bathed in sublime tonalities. The sky up above took on a new appearance, and because of that immense illuminated blue roof, we had the impression that we were in a marvelous palace. Deeply impressed, I tried to get closer to the small group of fellow spirits. Only a few women from the castle's work staff remained with us as though to offer honorable company to the noblest Melia. The other men and women remained at their posts not far from the mummified creatures. I noticed that, although Anicetto had been asked to lead the prayer, he excused himself, arguing that the position rightfully belonged to Alfredo's devoted wife. Ismelia, in an indefinably refined gesture, began to pray, silently accompanied by the rest of us. We followed her plea phrase by phrase, mindful of the recommendations of our guide, who had advised us to repeat each phrase in our own minds in order to impress the maximum rhythm and harmony onto her words, both sound and idea, in a single vibration. "Lord," Ismelia began, "please deign to assist our humble wards by sending us the light of your sanctifying blessings. We are here, ready to do your will, sincerely determined to serve your high intentions. With us, Father, our brothers and sisters still asleep, anesthetized by the spiritual denial to which they yielded while in the world. Awaken them, Lord, if it be your wise and merciful will, awaken them from their sorrowful and unhappy sleep. Awaken them to responsibility, to the idea of righteous duty. O magnanimous King, have pity on your suffering subjects, compassionate Creator, lift up your fallen creatures, righteous Father, forgive your unfortunate children. Let the dew of your infinite love fall on our humble aid station. May your will be done rather than ours, but if possible, Lord, may our patients receive a life-giving ray from the sun of your goodness." Ismelia's voice pierced the depths of my heart. Watching her for a moment, I noticed that she had become transfigured. Diamond-like lights radiated from her entire body, especially her chest area, whose core looked like it held the glow of a mysterious lamp. During a brief pause in her prayer, I looked around and noticed that the rest of us were displaying the same phenomenon, although less intensely. Each one of us seemed to display a luminous manifestation to some degree. The women accompanying Ismelia looked almost exactly like her, as if they were wearing splendid radiant garments predominated by the colored blue. Behind them, Anicetto's light blazed, a surprising lilac color, then Alfredo's light, a soft and subtle green but not too splendorous. Then, behind him were a few workers displaying sublime brilliancy on their foreheads, expressed in a variety of colors. Then, Vicente and myself, we displayed a weak luminosity, which nevertheless filled us with intense joy, considering that most of the other co-workers displayed only dark bodies, like those in the physical realm. In a deliberate and moving voice, Ismelia continued, "Here with us, O Lord, our unfortunate mothers who were unable to discover the sublime meaning of faith, falling imprudently into the precipice of sinful indifference, fathers who were unable to overcome materiality during the course of their human existence, incapable of discerning the beautiful mission you had entrusted to them, couples unhappy because they did not understand your kindly and generous laws, youngsters who gave themselves over, body and soul, to the suggestions of illusional. Many became bogged down in the quagmire of crime, worsening their onerous debts. Now they sleep, Father, waiting for your holy intentions. But we know, O Lord, that this sleep does not bring rest to their minds. Nearly all of our patients are victims of terrible nightmares for having forgotten your commandments of love and wisdom while in the material world. Although they appear to be immobile, their spirit moves amongst anguishing afflictions that we sometimes cannot fathom. It was they, Father, your wandering children and our companions in struggle, who need your fatherly hand to guide their way. Almost all have strayed from the straight and narrow due to suggestions of ignorance, which, like a giant spider, weaves its webs of misery, entangling destinies and hearts. Entreating your mercy for them, we also implore for ourselves the true sense of universal fraternity. Teach us to cross the barriers that separate us so that we may see in each of these unfortunate ones a brother or sister in need of our understanding. Help us to understand so that we may finally lose every impulse to judge others on the byways of life. Teach us to love them as Jesus loved us. Lord, we who beseech you here were also spiritual lepers, blind of understanding, paralyzed of will, prodigal children of your love. In times past, we also slept in the aid stations of your mercy. We are simple debtors, eager to pay off our immense debts. We know that your goodness never fails and we trustingly wait for your blessing of life and light. Ismelia paused again, longer this time. I dried my eyes, damp from sobbing. A gentle warmth, however, swept over my soul. This new sensation of comfort was so intense that I ceased to focus on myself so that I could look around me. Gazing instinctively upward, I was amazed to see a large quantity of whitish flakes of many different sizes falling copiously on those of us who were praying, but not on those who were sleeping. I had the impression that they were spilling from heaven upon our heads, falling in the same abundance over everyone, from Ismelia down to the least of the workers. I couldn't contain my wonder as yet another phenomenon caught me by surprise. The light flakes disappeared when they touched us, but from our foreheads and chests great luminous bubbles began to fall, which were the same color as the light with which we were covered. They rose into the air and reached the countless mummies. Even then, I noticed the issue of levels among spirits, in that the light bubbles emitted by Ismelia were more brilliant, intense and rapid, reaching many of the patients simultaneously. Next came the ones sent out by the women of her personal circle. After that, came those of Anicito, Alfredo and the others. The dark-bodied workers emitted weak but visibly luminous vibrations. In that instant of contact with the higher plane, everybody revealed their own worth in the work they could offer. Noticing my astonishment, Anicito whispered in my ear, "In prayer, we encounter the advanced production of power elements. Although they come from Providence in equal amounts for all those who give themselves to the divine work of intercession, each spirit has a different capacity for receiving them. This capacity is the result of the individual's efforts at striving to reach the higher planes. And since God helps humans through other humans, and assists souls through other souls, each one of us can only help our fellow beings and cooperate with the Lord by using the evolutionary qualities that we have already attained in life." Headline: Her Prayer's Effects. The lights from the prayer flooded the huge ward. A peace-filled glow now pulsated in everything. It was gentle and radiant, and very different from the artificial lighting. The shiny bubbles that fell from us multiplied in the air as if they were undergoing some mysterious process of division. They continued falling on the inanimate and rigid bodies, giving the impression of penetrating their innermost cells. I was dumbfounded. I had never witnessed phenomena like this in Nosola. Besides, I concluded, I had received the magnetic aid for increasing my perceptions only a few hours before the journey. The light grew and spread out in an extraordinary spectacle. We abandoned the meditative posture that we had been using in order to concentrate our strength and to emit our vibrational energies. Nevertheless, our bodies remained enveloped in a huge, radiant sphere. As the overall silence continued, I noticed that the light from the prayer was becoming clearer and more intense. Just as in Anna's case, I began to see in addition to their death masks, all those miserable skeletons displayed dark nuclei that displayed a variety of different forms. The luminous bubbles continued to fall, but now, as if guided by an intelligent will, almost all of them were converging on the lifeless foreheads. and I saw something unheard of and inconceivable. The mummies, I couldn't think of another label for those sleeping brothers and sisters, began to show signs of life. Some of the wretches began emitting anguishing groans while others, like somnambulists about to wake up, were speaking out loud and describing the nightmares that were tormenting them. Many were moving their feet and hands as if making efforts to flee from their sorrow-filled sleep. I was extremely surprised at seeing that two of them, some ways away, had actually gotten up. I remembered them both as having been among those who had received all the treatments that had been offered, including the healing breath. They looked at us like lunatics who had suddenly awakened, and then broke into a run, horror-stricken, looking like zombies. I was astonished that no one showed the least inclination to follow them, and when I instinctively tried to, Alfredo stopped me, "Don't worry. They would be bitterly surprised if they were told that they had been sleeping for such a long time amongst mummies. They think they're dreaming, and it's better that they do. They won't be able to get past our fortifications and will ask for help at other facilities, where they'll be received for appropriate treatment." We remained silent for a few more minutes and I noticed that the lights were slowly going out. The corpses returned to their previous immobility. 158. Ismailia stated that our prayer service had ended, and after giving the luminous signal announcing to the workers the end of their duties, the administrator approached us, exclaiming, "Many thanks for your fraternal cooperation. That was indeed a beautiful intercessory service. No one has gotten up in quite a few days." Anicetto noticed our perplexity and said to Vicente and me, "You have seen that prayer work in the material realm is more important than you can imagine. There is no prayer that doesn't receive an answer. Prayer, the daughter of love, is not only supplication, it is communion between the Creator and His creatures, thus comprising the most powerful magnetic influx known. While we are on the matter, however, I might add that malevolent prayer also has enormous influential potential. Every time a spirit assumes such a mental attitude, a communication link is established between it and the beyond. If prayer is centered on the divine good, then wherever it comes from, it heads toward the beyond vertically in search of the blessings of the superior life. But we must warn you that evil spirits respond to other evil spirits on the lower planes, and they intertwine mentally with each other. We must stress, however, that every impersonal prayer addressed in the name of God to the supreme forces of the good receives an immediate response. Powerful elements that vitalize our inner world flow down from the highest spheres upon those who pray during these blessed tasks, building divine hope within us, and then, in our intense desire to serve with the Lord, they flow outward, saturated with our personal magnetism. Attempting to materialize his thought to make it easier for us to understand, he stressed, "You both saw the elements I'm referring to falling upon us, and you observed their outward flow, carrying the light of sea. Each one of us on behalf of our sleeping and suffering brothers and sisters. The Most High granted all of us equal portions of power to help, but we spread it according to our individual ability and coloration." Ismailia, whose sentiments are broader and more universalistic than ours, was able to receive the divine aid more clearly and was able to distribute it more abundantly and effectively. There is a profound lesson in this. As I already said, the Father visits his needy children through the children who seek to understand him. We can't abuse the Lord the way we abuse our human parents, that is, he does not live to satisfy our personal whims. He would never come in person to dry the tears of the needy who weep as the result of having forgotten the divine laws. Those in need must turn to him instead. But he always assists people of goodwill through good people who have been schooled in the divine house of goodness. All our reasonable desires and impulses are answered by the paternal blessings of the Eternal One. Even though we may wallow in our tears and afflictions, we are never left helpless. We must only stress that answers from God tend to become greater and more direct to the degree that our merit increases, and we need to realize that for such answers God uses all those who carry the light of goodness within them, or who have merit and confidence to offer aid in His name. Anicetto's explanations opened up new arenas of meditation for me, But he had not finished the lesson, and after a long pause, he concluded, "Since you have joined me in a course of helpful service, I hope that you will make the most of this lesson. You may have noticed that in these wards there are 1,980 sleeping patients. They all receive regular daily nourishment and medication, but only 400 are being given specialized nourishment and medication because they seem to be more likely to improve. Of these 400, only 2/3 have shown themselves capable of receiving magnetic passes. Many cannot receive energized water for now. Very few received the healing breath and only 2 actually got up, but even so, they were still in a deeply disturbed state. Now that you have begun your work of fraternal cooperation, don't forget this lesson. Let us all do good without being anxious about it. Let us sow it always and everywhere, but let's not get stuck by demanding results. The farmer can sow his seed at will and wherever he wants, but he must realize that the germination, growth and results belong to God." Headline: Listening to the Workers. I noticed that the work at the station was unfolding in the friendliest and most harmonious atmosphere, despite the natural respect for notions of hierarchy. While we were engaged in lively conversation, Ismelia, like a real mother, was involved with several female workers, although some of them looked old enough to be her grandmother. Anisato was teaching us important lessons, drawing upon apparently insignificant circumstances. And Alfredo was welcoming co-workers in every condition imaginable, displaying not just a spirit of solidarity, but one of great kindness. He laughed affectionately or offered opinions without the least sign of impatience or irritation. That harmonious environment did me a lot of good. Everything breathed order and understanding, goodness and harmony. I was strongly attracted to Alfredo's paternal attitude, expressed in energy and friendship, organization and understanding. I asked Anisato's permission to listen to the instructions being given to the numerous co-workers. A friendly co-worker was speaking excitedly to Anisato. He was an elderly man with a humble expression, and was talking to Anisato with an attitude of true respect. "Have you heard the news?"
"Yes, Alonso. Our messengers have informed me in the greatest detail. Your widow is still very much grief-stricken, but your little ones are enjoying good health, although they, too, are still troubled because of your absence." The old man, who seemed to be very kind, nodded and added, "I miss them so much." His eyes displayed resigned sadness, like someone who desires something and measures the extent of the obstacles involved. "But you mustn't agonize over it, Alonso," continued Alfredo. "I know that now working for your family's future. While on the earth as parents, we can make a lot of arrangements for our children. Here, however, we can more safely take certain measures on their behalf. We do not always see things clearly enough to make the right decisions while on earth, but here it is possible to determine more accurately what would be of lasting interest for those we love. The higher sentiment is always the correct path for our soul. Nevertheless, we cannot say the same with regard to the sentimentalism cultivated in the physical realm. You must be very careful not to let your mind get confused. A longing that hurts and keeps us from attending to the divine will is neither praiseworthy nor useful. It is an illness of the heart, casting us into unfathomable abysses of thought." Alonso stopped smiling and his eyes filled with tears as he spoke in a beseeching voice, "I know how appropriate your remarks are, Alfredo, sir. Thanks to Jesus, I have been improving my mental life with their new tasks you have given me. I feel spiritually renewed, in fact. I know that your words of caution have not been without reason. Still, I would dare to ask for permission to visit my wife and kids. At night when I'm saying my prayers, I feel their thoughts around me. They penetrate me deeply and draw all my attention to the earth. Sometimes I manage to get a little rest, but it's not easy. I know that my wife and children are calling for me in their grief. This certainty disturbs me somehow. I haven't felt the usual steadfastness in my daily work and I would like to remedy the situation. I realize that my current obligations are elsewhere and that I should accept that fact. Nevertheless, I must confess that my spiritual struggle has been awful. I'm certain that you'll forgive my weakness. What head of a family wouldn't feel tormented at hearing such anguished appeals from home, and feel helpless at not having the means to assist them as the situation requires? Displaying profound longing, he wiped his eyes and continued, I wish I could urge them to compose themselves and have courage, explaining that my heart is still fragile and needs their support. I would be glad if I could ask them to do just that, much so that I could meet my current obligations without failing. Maybe now you'll give me permission? There's a group of Spiritist friends close to our home. Maybe I could transmit a few words, no matter how brief, and try to comfort my wife and children. Alfredo remained unperturbed and didn't say no. He seemed to understand completely the concern of the friendly and humble worker. I noticed in his lucid gaze the sincere desire to be of help, and with extreme admiration for his generous conduct, he offered, We just might be able to give you what you want, my dear Alonso. Our emissaries could take you there as they make their regular rounds, however, believe me that, as a friend, I would be concerned about you. It might upset your peace of mind. I can't abuse my authority, and I know that each one undergoes the experience he needs, but I believe it is in your vital interest to strengthen your soul. It is essential that we conform ourselves to the designs of the Eternal. You and your wife would not have been separated if you didn't need new experiences. Because of your separation from her, you too have been suffering from the difficulties that she has been grieving over in your absence. Alonso, I believe that God leaves us alone sometimes so that we can learn all over again and make our hearts stronger. When made use of by the soul, however, loneliness precedes the sublime re-encounter. Moreover, you must not forget that your children belong to God and that they need to come to grips with their responsibilities and think about their own attainments. For now, they are tearful and downcast. Rebelliousness is visiting their unwary souls. Domestic chaos set in after you came here. But what can you do except ask for the blessing of the Eternal One for them and for us? They need to accept the way things really are at the moment. You have already given them what was reasonable, and now you too must evolve and grow on the new path to which you have been called. What would happen, my dear fellow, if you allowed a full-scale invasion of unhealthy sentimentalism into your thoughts? You are so dedicated to your family that for now I don't feel you are prepared well enough to see all that has been happening in your old home without suffering disastrously. Some time ago, I authorized the visit of two of our workers to the earth so that they could see their widows and embrace their little ones again. But they were so violently shaken by the situation that they couldn't return to their duties here. They stayed there, clinging to the nest they had abandoned. They didn't keep proper guard over their hearts. They listened too much to the grieving of their families, enveloping themselves in the heavy fluids of the home environment. After the week that had been granted to them was up, they couldn't bring themselves to return. They were like birds imprisoned by the enticement of temptation. Those in charge of personal news returned to the station without them, which came as a great surprise to me. And frankly, I don't know when they will be able to resume their duties. The damage to both was awful. After a short pause, Alfredo concluded, "Flying high requires strong wings." Alonso, who had been listening wide-eyed, resigned himself. "I've changed my mind." "Right." Alfredo embraced him and whispered, "May God illumine your mind." I was amazed as other co-workers approached Alfredo, begging for explanations and opinions, and I learned much from his example as he responded to all in a firm and kindly voice in a true display of brotherly interest. The slanderer. While Alfredo was indulging in instructive conversation with a number of his subordinates, Anicetu called us over to a small isolated structure and said, "Time for another lesson." We went over to a few chambers that were separated from one another. Our instructor opened a door to one of them and we saw a madman who seemed deeply upset. He gave us an expressionless look and screamed loudly. Anicetu greeted him respectfully, "How are you today, Paolo?" I sensed that his words emitted a certain magnetic flow and the patient showed a profound change. He suddenly quieted down. He was calmer as he sat down, although he was still shaky and skittish. "Have you been feeling any better, Paolo?" our guide kindly asked, touching him on the shoulder. At Anicetto's physical touch, the patient seemed more rational and replied, "I'm getting better, thank." Seeing that he had hesitated, Anicetto spoke in a firm tone of voice, as if he wanted to help his weakened will. The patient made a tremendous effort and concluded, "As I was observing his suffering and indecision, I remembered the patients in the chambers, to whom Narciso offered her loving care. Perceiving my thoughts, my mentor explained, 'Can you see the difference between those who are asleep, those who are insane and those who are suffering? We don't have any of the first kind in Nosola, and most of the unstable ones being treated in regeneration feel cruel anguish. We have to realize, however, that those who moan and suffer, wherever they may be, are actually getting better. Every sincere tear is a blessed indication of renewal. The mocking, sarcastic or disturbed patients who do not show their pain are worthier of pity because they remain numbed in a strange rigidity of mind.' And pointing to the sick man, he affirmed, 'Paolo is a patient who is on the way to real improvement. He still doesn't have a clear awareness of his situation, but he is already weeping and suffering from the memories of his unhappy past.' I listened closely. I remembered that the patients brought daily to Nosola by the Samaritans were indeed suffering tremendously. Those who were not undergoing actual, atrocious afflictions displayed a strange fear of the dark. The only spirit whom I had seen there, and who was completely unaware of her own misery, was the poor vampire that had been refused refuge in the chambers of rectification. With no qualms at all about making the patient a guinea pig, our instructor suggested, 'Concentrate your visual abilities on Paolo.' Encouraged by my previous experience, I focused all my powers of observation on him. Little by little, his mental screen began to take shape. It seemed to be formed of dense nocturnal darkness. I was surprised to see several forms moving about on it, and I was even more astonished as I saw several figures of women emerging. Among them was the figure of Ismilia, looking as though she were ill, weak and anxious. A few desperate-looking men also passed by. Alfredo himself was among them, looking tired and prematurely aged. I heard mysterious voices. Curses and blasphemies rained down on Paolo. The women seemed to be shouting accusations at him, and the men looked like ferocious stalkers, hiding in the sick man's strange inner world. As I watched the figures of Ismilia and Alfredo moving about on that dark screen, I couldn't contain my curiosity and interrupted my detailed examination to ask our guide, 'What is this? I'm aghast.' But before I could say any more about my overwhelming amazement, Anicetta replied, 'I know. Surprised at seeing Ismilia and her husband in the patient's memories. And seeing my perplexity, he continued, 'Do you remember Alfredo's story? This is the false friend who destroyed his home. Paolo didn't commit only that one disgraceful act. He also poisoned the spirits of other women, betrayed other friends and destroyed the joy and peace of other homes as well. These desperate memories of the highly afflicted Ismilia and the desperate Alfredo are images created by the slanderer himself. Our friends at this station have evolved. They have moved beyond the borders of bitterness and have escaped the monsters of hate. Today they are clothed in light. Nevertheless, as punishment for his guilt, Paolo sees them as he imagines them to be. Criminals never manage to escape universal justice, because they carry the crime they committed with them wherever they go. In the physical realm as well as here, the real landscape of the spirit is that of the inner self. In fact, we live according to the innermost creations of our soul.' Noticing that I was having a hard time grasping this, Anicetto continued after a brief pause, 'For a clearer explanation, let's recall the crucifixion of the Divine Master. We know that Jesus entered into sublime glory after the supreme sacrifice on Calvary. However, we still frequently see him hanging on the cross, martyred by our wrongs and flogged by our whips, because our inner vision compels us to. The condemnation of the Master was a collective crime that will be with us until the day we don the divine light of redemption. His explanation couldn't have been clearer. I felt like I was facing a noble revelation. Duty is full of blessings of trust, but debt carries the ghosts of exaction, he replied in a grave tone.